like wind seeds about the flame-seared wreck. Hawser smiled slightly at the debris, weighing a handful of the unused projectiles in his hand. "The mind," Whoopslin said, looking down at what was left of the small vehicle. "It made this thing." He scratched his head. "Must have," Hawser said, watching Yalson poke warily at the torn metal of the wreck's hull with one booted foot, gun ready. "There was nothing like this down here, but you could manufacture it in one of the workshops. A few of the old machines still work. It'd be difficult, but if the mine still had some of its fields working, and maybe a drone or two, it could do it. It had the time." "Pretty crude," Wolfslin said, turning over a piece of the gun mechanism in his hand. He turned and looked back at the distant corpses of the Medjel and added, "Worked well enough, though." "No more Medjel by my count," Hawser said. "Still two Adirans left," Yalson said sourly, kicking at a small rubber wheel. It rolled a couple of meters across the debris and flopped over again near Nysin, who was celebrating the discovery of the demised Medjel with a drink from his flask. "You sure these Adirans aren't still here?" Avajah asked, looking round anxiously. Dorolo peered into the darkness too and made the sign of the circle of flame. "Positive," Hawser said. "I checked." Station 5 hadn't been difficult to search. It was an ordinary station, just a set of points, a chicane in the command system's double loop, and a place for the trains to stop and connect themselves with the communication links to the planet's surface. There were a few rooms and storage areas off the main cavern, but no power switching gear, no barracks or control rooms, and no vast repair and maintenance area. Marks in the dust showed where the Adirans had walked away from the station after the battle with the mine's crude automaton, heading for Station 6. "You think there'll be a train at the next station?" Whoopsin said. Hawser nodded. "Should be." The engineer nodded too, staring vacantly at the double sets of steel rails gleaming on the station floor. Balveda swung herself off the pallet, stretching her legs. Hawser still had the suit's infrared sensor on and saw the warmth of the culture agent's breath waft from her mouth in a dimly glowing cloud. She clapped her hands and stamped her feet. "Still not too warm, is it?" she said. "Don't worry," grumbled the drone from underneath the pallet. "I may start to overheat soon. That ought to keep you cozy until I seize up completely." Balveda smiled a little and sat back on the pallet, looking at Hawser. "Still thinking of trying to convince your tripedal pals you're all on the same side?" she said. "Huh," said the drone. "We'll see," was all Hawser would say. Again, his breathing, his heartbeat, the slow wash of stale air. The tunnels led on into the deep night of the ancient rock like an insidious circular maze. "The war won't end," Avajah said. "It'll just die away." Hawser floated along the tunnel, half listening to the others talk over the open channel as they followed him. He'd switched his suit's external mics from the helmet speakers to a small screen near his cheek. The trace showed silence. Avajah continued, "I don't think the culture will give in like everybody thinks it will. I think they'll keep fighting because they believe in it. The Adirans won't give in either. They'll keep fighting to the last, and they and the culture will just keep going at each other all the time, all over the galaxy, eventually. And their weapons and bombs and rays and things will just keep getting better and better. And in the end, the whole galaxy will become a battleground until they've blown up all the stars and planets and orbitals and everything else big enough to stand on. And then they'll destroy all of each other's big ships, and then the little ships too, until everybody will be living in single suits, blowing each other up with weapons that could destroy a planet. And that's how it'll end. Probably they'll invent guns or drones that are even smaller, and there'll only be a few smaller and smaller machines fighting over whatever's left of the galaxy, and there'll be nobody left to know how it all started in the first place." "Well," said Una Harkloth's voice, "that sounds like a lot of fun. And what if things go badly?"
"That's too negative an attitude to battle, Avajah," Dorlo's high-pitched voice broke in. "You have to be positive. Contest is formative. Battle is a testing. War a part of life, and the evolutionary process. In its extremity, we find ourselves."
"Usually in the shit," Yalson said. Hawser grinned.
"Yalson," Dorlo began, "even if you don't be..."
"Hold it," Hawser said suddenly. The screen near his cheek had flickered. "Wait there. I'm picking up some sound from ahead." He stopped, sat still in midair, and put the sound from outside through the helmet speakers. A low noise, deep and boomy, like heavy surf from a long way off, or a thunderstorm in distant mountains. "Well, there's something making a noise up there," Hawser said.
How far to the next station?
Yarsen said. About 2 kilometres.
Think it's them?
Nysin sounded nervous. Probably, Horza said. Okay, I'm going ahead. Yarsen, put Malveda in the restrainer harness. Everybody check weapons. No noise. Wubslin, Nysin, go forward slowly. Stop as soon as you can see the station. I'm going to try talking to these guys. The noise boomed vaguely on, making him think of a rock slide heard from a mine deep inside a mountain. He approached the station. A blast door came into view round a corner. The station would be only another 100 metres beyond. He heard some heavy clunking noises. They came down the dark tunnel, deep and resonant, hardly muffled by the distance, sounding like huge switches being closed, massive chains being fastened. The suit registered organic molecules in the air. Idirin scent. He passed the edge of the blast door and saw the station. There was light in Station 6, dim and yellow as though from a weak torch. He waited for Wubslin and Nysin to tell him they could see the station from their tunnels. Then he went closer. A command system train stood in Station 6, its rotund bulk 3 stories tall and 300 metres long, half filling the cylindrical cavern. The light came from the train's far end, high at the front, where the control deck was. The sounds came from the train too. He moved across the foot tunnel so he could see the rest of the station. At the far end of the platform floated the mind. He stared at it for a moment, then magnified the image to make sure. It looked genuine. An ellipsoid, maybe 15 metres long and 3 in diameter, silvery yellow in the weak light spilling from the train's control cabin, and floating in the stale air like a dead fish on the surface of a still pond. He checked the suit's mass sensor. It registered the fuzzy signal of the train's reactor, but nothing else. Yelson, he said, whispering, even though he knew it was unnecessary. Anything on that mass sensor?
Just a weak trace, a reactor, I guess.
Wubslin, Horza said, I can see what looks like the mind in the station, floating at the far end, but it's not showing on either sensor. Would its AG make it invisible to the sensors?
Shouldn't.
Wubslin's puzzled voice came back. Might fool a passive gravity sensor, but not... A loud metallic braking noise came from the train. Horza's suit registered an abrupt increase in local radiation.
Holy shit, he said. What's happening?
Yarsen said. More clicking, snapping noises echoed through the station, and another weak yellow light appeared from beneath the reactor car in the middle of the train.
They're fucking about with the reactor carriage, that's what's happening, Horza said.
God, Wubslin said. Don't they know how old all this stuff is?
What are they doing that for?
Avager said. Could be trying to get the train to run under its own power, Horza said. Crazy bastards.
Maybe they're too lazy to push their prize back to the surface, the drone suggested.
These nuclear reactors, they can't explode, can they? Avager said, just as a blinding blue light burst from under the centre of the train. Horza flinched, his eyes closed. He heard Wubslin shout something. He waited for the blast, the noise, death. He looked up. The light still flashed and sparkled under the reactor car. He heard an erratic hissing noise, like static.
Horza?
Yarsen shouted.
God's balls, Wubslin said. I nearly filled my pants.
It's okay, Horza said. I thought they'd blown the damn thing up.
What is that, Wubslin?
Welding, I think, Wubslin said. Electric arc. Right, Horza said. Let's stop these crazies before they blow us all away. Yarsen, join me. Dorlo, meet up with Wubslin. Avager, stay with Malveda. It took a few minutes for the others to arrange themselves. Horza watched the bright, flickering blue light as it sizzled away under the centre of the train. Then it stopped. The station was lit only by the 2 weak lights from the control deck and reactor car. Yarsen floated down the foot tunnel and landed gently at Horza's side.
Ready?
Dorlo said over the intercom. Then a screen in Horza's helmet flashed. A speaker beeped in his ear. Something had transmitted a signal nearby, not one of their suits or the drone.
What was that? Wubslin said. Then, look there on the ground. Looks like a communicator.
Horza and Yarsen looked at each other.
Horza? Wubslin said. There's a communicator on the floor of the tunnel here. I think it's on.
It must have picked up the noise of Dorlo sitting down beside me. That was what transmitted. They're using it as a bug.
Sorry,
Dorlo said.
Well, don't touch the thing, Yalson said quickly. Could be boobied.
So, now they know we're here, Avager said.
They were going to know soon anyway, Horza said. I'll try hailing them. Everybody ready in case they don't want to talk.
Horza cut his AG and walked to the end of the tunnel, almost onto the level platform of the station. Another communicator, lying there, transmitted its single pulse. Horza looked at the great dark train and switched on his suit PA. He drew a breath, ready to speak in Adiran. Something flashed from a slit window near the rear of the train. His head was knocked back inside the helmet and he fell, stunned, his ears ringing. The noise of the shot echoed through the station. The suit alarm beeped frantically at him. Horza rolled over against the tunnel wall. More shots slammed down on him, flaring against the suit helmet and body. Yalson ducked and ran. She skidded to the lip of the tunnel and raked fire over the window the shots were coming from, then swiveled, grabbed Horza by one arm and pulled him further into the tunnel. Plasma bolts crashed into the wall he'd been lying against.
Horza?
She shouted, shaking him.
Command override level 0,
a small voice chirped in Horza's buzzing ears.
This suit has sustained system fatal damage, automatically voiding all warranties from this point. Immediate total overhaul required. Further use at wearer's risk. Powering down.
Horza tried to tell Yalson he was all right, but the communicator was dead. He pointed to his head to make her understand this. Then more shots from the nose of the train came bursting into the foot tunnel. Yalson dived to the floor and started firing back.
Fire! She yelled to the others. Get those bastards!
Horza watched Yalson shooting at the far end of the train. Laser trails flicked out from the left side of their tunnel, tracer shells from the right as the others joined in. The station filled with a spastic, blazing light. Shadows leapt and danced across the walls and ceiling. He lay there, stunned, dull-headed, listening to the muffled cacophony of sound breaking against his suit like surf. He fumbled with his laser rifle, trying to remember how to fire it. He really had to help the others fight the Adirans. His head hurt. Yalson stopped shooting. The front of the train glowed red where she'd been firing at it. The explosive shells from Nysin's gun crackled round the window the first shots had come from, short bursts of fire. Wubslin and Dorilo had come out of the main tunnel, past the slab of the train's rear. They crouched near the wall, firing at the same window as Nysin. The plasma fire had stopped. The humans stopped shooting too. The station went dark. The gunfire echoed, faded. Horza tried to stand up, but somebody seemed to have removed the bones from his legs.
Anybody?
Yalson began. Fire cascaded around Wubslin and Dorilo, lancing out from the lower deck of the last carriage. Dorilo screamed and fell. Hand spasming, a gun blasted wildly over the cavern roof. Wubslin rolled along the ground, shooting back at the Adirans. Yalson and Nysin joined in. The carriage's skin buckled and burst under the fusillade. Dorilo lay on the platform, moving spasmodically, moaning. More shots came from the front of the train, bursting around the tunnel entrances. Then something moved midway up the rear carriage, near the rear actress gantry. An Adiran ran from a carriage door and along the middle ramp. He levelled a gun and fired down, first at Dorilo where she lay on the ground, then at Wubslin, lying near the side of the train. Dorilo's suit was blown, tumbling and burning across the black floor of the station. Wubslin's gun arm was hit. Then Yalson's shots found the Adiran, scattering fire across his suit, the structure of the gantry and the side of the train. The ramp supports gave way before the Adiran's armoured suit, softening and disintegrating under the stream of fire. The gantry tubing sagged and collapsed, sending the top platform of the ramp crashing down, trapping the Adiran warrior underneath the smoking wreckage. Wubslin cursed and shot one-handed at the nose of the train, where the second Adiran was still firing. Horza lay against the wall, his ears roaring, his skin cold and sweat-slicked. He felt numb, dissociated. He wanted to take his helmet off and gasp at some fresh air, but knew he shouldn't. Even though the helmet was damaged, it would still protect him if he was shot again. He compromised by opening the visor. Sound assaulted his ears. Shockwaves thrummed at his chest. Yalson looked back at him, motioned him further back down the tunnel as shots smacked into the floor near him. He stood, but fell, blacking out briefly. The Adiran at the front of the train stopped firing for a moment. Yalson took the opportunity to look back at Horza again. He lay on the tunnel floor behind her, moving weakly. She looked out to where Dorilo lay, her suit ripped and smouldering. Nysin was almost out of his tunnel, firing long bursts down the station, scattering explosions all over the nose of the train. The air boomed with a rasping noise of his gun.
ebbing and flowing through the cavern and accompanied by a pulsing wave of light that seemed to reach back from where the bullet struck and detonated. Yalson was aware of somebody shouting, a woman's voice yelling, but she could hardly hear over the noise of Nysin's gun. Plasma bolts came singing down the platform from the front of the train again, from high up near the forward access ramps. She returned fire. Nysin poured shots in the same direction, paused. "In stop!" the voice shouted in Yalson's ears. It was Balveda. "There's something wrong with your gun. It'll..." The culture agent's voice was drowned by the noise of Nysin firing again. "Crash!" Yalson heard Balveda scream despairingly, then a line of light and sound seemed to fill the station from one end to the other, ending at Nysin. The bright stalk of noise and flame blossomed into an explosion Yalson felt through her suit. Bits of Nysin's gun were scattered across the platform. The man was thrown back against the wall. He fell to the ground and lay still. "Motherfucker!" Yalson heard herself say, and she started running up the platform, enfilading the front of the train, trying to widen the angle of fire. Shots dipped to meet her, then cut out. There was a pause while she still ran and fired, then the second Adiran appeared on the top level of the distant access ramp, holding a pistol in both hands. He ignored both her and Wobslin's fire and shot straight across the breadth of the cavern at the mind. The silvery ellipsoid started to move, heading for the far foot tunnel. The first shot seemed to go right through it, as did a second. A third bolt made it vanish completely, leaving only a tiny puff of smoke where it had been. The Adiran's suit glittered as Yalson and Wobslin's shots struck home. The warrior staggered. He turned as though to start firing down at them again, just as the armoured suit gave way. He was blown back and across the gantry, one arm disappearing in a cloud of flame and smoke. He fell over the edge of the ramp and crashed down to the middle level, the suit burning brightly, one leg snagging over the guardrails on the middle ramp. The plasma pistol was blown from his hand. Other shots tore at the wide helm, fracturing the blackened visor. He hung, limp and burning and pummeled with laser fire for a few more seconds. Then the leg caught on the guardrail gave way, snapping cleanly off and falling to the station floor. The Adiran slid, crumpling to the deck of the ramp. Horza listened, his ears still ringing. After a while it was quiet. Acrid smoke stung his nose. Fumes of burned plastic, molten metal, roasted meat. He had been unconscious, then woken to see Yalson running up the platform. He had tried to give her covering fire, but his hands shook too much, and he hadn't been able to get the gun to work. Now everybody had stopped firing, and it was very quiet. He got up and walked unsteadily into the station, where smoke rose from the battered train. Wobslin knelt by Dorolo's side, trying with one hand to undo one of the woman's gloves. Her suit still smouldered. The helmet visor was smeared red, covered with blood on the inside, hiding her face. Horza watched Yalson come back down the station, guns still at the ready. Her suit had taken a couple of plasma bolts to the body, the roughly spiralled marks showed as black scars on the grey surface. She looked up suspiciously at the rear access ramps, where one Adiran lay, trapped and unmoving. Then she opened her visor. "You all right?" she asked Horza. "Yes, but groggy. Sore head," he said. Yalson nodded. They went over to where Nysin lay. Nysin was still just alive. His gun had exploded, riddling his chest, arms and face with shrapnel. Moans bubbled from the crimson ruin of his face. "Fucking hell," Yalson said. She took a small medipack from her suit and reached through what was left of Nysin's visor to inject the semi-conscious man's neck with painkiller. "What's happened?" Avager's tiny voice came from Yalson's helmet. "Is it safe yet?" Yalson looked at Horza, who shrugged, then nodded. "Yeah, it's safe, Avager," Yalson said. "You can come in." "I'll let Balveda use my suit, Mike. She said she..." "We heard," Yalson said. "Something about a barrel crash. That right?" Horza heard Balveda's muffled voice affirming this. "She thought Nysin's gun might blow up or something." "Well, it did," Yalson said. "He looks pretty bad." She glanced over at Wobslin, who was putting Dorolo's hand back down. Wobslin shook his head when he saw Yalson looking at him. "Dorolo got blown away, Avager," Yalson said. The old man was silent for a moment, then said, "And Horza?" "Took a plasma round on the head box. Suit damage, no communication. He'll live." Yalson paused, sighed. Looks like we lost the mind, though. It disappeared. Avager waited another few moments before saying, his voice shaking,
"Well, a fine little mess. Easy in, easy out. Another triumph. Our change of friend taking over where Craiglin left off."
His voice finished on a high pitch of anger. He switched his transceiver off. Yalson looked at Hosa, shook her head and said,
"Old asshole."
Wubslin still knelt over Dorolo's body. They heard him sob a couple of times before he too cut out of the open channel. Nysin's slowing breath spluttered through a mask of blood and flesh. Yalson made the circle of flame sign over the red haze masking Dorolo's face, then covered the body with a sheet from the pallet. Hawes's ears stopped ringing, the grogginess cleared. Balveda, freed from the restrainer harness, watched the changer tend to Nysin. Avager stood nearby with Wubslin, whose arm wound had already been treated.
"I heard the noise," Balveda explained. "It has a distinctive noise."
Wubslin had asked why Nysin's gun had exploded and how Balveda had known it was going to happen.
"I'd have recognized it too if I hadn't been smacked on the head," Horza said.
He was teasing fragments of visor out of the unconscious man's face, spraying skin gel onto the places where blood oozed. Nysin was in shock, probably dying, but they couldn't even take him out of his suit. Too much blood had clotted between the man's body and the materials of the device he wore. It would plug the many small punctures effectively enough until the suit was removed, but then Nysin would start to bleed in too many places for them to cope with. So they had to leave him in the thing, as though in that mutual wreckage the human and machine had become one fragile organism.
"But what happened?"
Wubslin said.
"His gun barrel crashed," Hawser said.
"The projectiles must have been set to explode on too soft an impact, so the shells started to detonate when they hit the blast wave from the bullets in front, not the target. He didn't stop firing, so the blast front retarded right back into the muzzle of the gun."
"The guns have sensors to stop it happening," Balveda added, wincing with vicarious pain as Hawser drew a long sliver of visor from an eye socket. "I guess his wasn't working."
"Told him that gun was too damn cheap when he bought it," Yalson said, coming over to stand by Hawser.
"Poor little bugger," Wubslin said.
"Two more dead," Avager announced. "I hope you're happy, Mr. Hawser. I hope you're so pleased about what your allies have—"
"Avager,"
Yalson said calmly, "shut up."
The old man glared at her for a second, then stamped off. He stood looking down at Dorolo. Unaha Klosp floated down from the rear access ramp.
"That Adiran up there," it said, its voice pitched to betray mild surprise. "He's alive. Couple of tons of junk on top of him, but he's still breathing."
"What about the other one?" Hawser said.
"No idea. I didn't like to go too close. It's terribly messy up there."
Hawser left Yalson to look after Nysin. He walked over the debris-strewn platform to the wreckage of the rear access gantry. He was bareheaded. The suit's helmet was ruined, and the suit itself had lost its AG and motor power, as well as most of its sensors. On backup energy, the light still worked, as did the small repeater screen set into one wrist. The suit's mass sensor was damaged, the wrist screen filled with clutter when linked to the sensor, barely registering the train's reactor at all. His rifle was still working, for whatever that was worth now. He stood at the bottom of the ramps and felt the dregs of heat seeping from the metal support legs where laser fire had struck. He took a deep breath and climbed up the ramp to where the Adiran lay, his massive head sticking out of the wreckage sandwiched between the two levels of ramp. The Adiran turned slowly to look at him and one arm tensed against the wreckage, which creaked and moved. Then the warrior brought his arm out from beneath the press of metal and unfastened the scarred battle helm. He let it fall to the floor. The great saddle face looked up at the changer. "The greetings of the battle day," Hawser said in careful Adiran.
"Oh," boomed the Adiran. "The little one speaks our tongue."
"I'm even on your side, though I don't expect you to believe it. I belong to the intelligence section of the first marine dominant under the Quirl Zorolundra." Hawser sat down on the ramp, almost level with the Adiran's face. "I was sent in here to try to get the mind," he continued.
"Really?" the Adiran said. "Pity. I believe my comrade just destroyed it."
"So I hear," Hawser said, leveling the laser rifle at the big face, viced between the twisted metal planking. You also destroyed the changers back up at the base. I am a changer. That's why our mutual masters sent me in here. Why did you have to kill my people?
What else could we do, human? The Adiran said impatiently. They were an obstacle. We needed their weaponry. They would have tried to stop us. We were too few to guard them.
The creature's voice was laboured as it fought the weight of Ramp, crushing its torso and rib cylinder. Hawser aimed the rifle straight at the Adiran's face.
You vicious bastard.
I have to blow your fucking head off right now.
By all means, midget.
The Adiran smiled, the double set of hard lips spreading.
My comrade has already fallen bravely. Queer Norl has started his long journey through the upper world. I am captured and victorious at once, and you offer me the solace of the gun. I shall not close my eyes, human.
You don't have to, Hawser said, letting the gun down. He looked over through the darkness of the station at Dorolo's body, then into the dim, smoked, hazed light in the distance, where the nose and control deck of the train glowed faintly, illuminating an empty patch of floor where the mind had been. He turned back to the Adiran. I'm taking you back. I believe there are still units of the 93rd Fleet out beyond the Quiet Barrier. I have to report my failure and deliver a female culture agent to the Fleet Inquisitor. I'm going to report you for exceeding your orders and killing those changes. Not that I expect it'll do any good.
Your story bores me, little one.
The Adiran looked away and strained once more at the press of twisted metal covering him, but to no avail.
Kill me now. You do smell so, and your speech grates. Ours is not a tongue for animals.
What's your name? Hawser said. The saddle head turned to him again. The eyes blinked slowly.
Zoxarl, human. Now you'll sully it by trying to pronounce it, no doubt.
Well, you just rest there, Zoxarl. Like I said, we'll take you with us. First, I want to check on the mind you destroyed. A thought has just occurred to me. Hawser got to his feet. His head hurt abominably where the helmet had slammed into it, but he ignored the pounding in his skull and started back down the ramp, limping a little.
Your soul is shit, the Adiran called. Zoxarl boomed after him. Your mother should have been strangled at the moment she came on heat. We were going to eat the changes we killed, but they smelled like filth.
Save your breath, Zoxarl, Hawser said, not looking at the Adiran. I'm not going to shoot you. Hawser met Yalson at the bottom of the ramp. The drone had agreed to look after Nysin. Hawser looked to the far end of the station. I want to see where the mind was. What do you think happened to it? Yalson asked, falling into step beside him. He shrugged. Yalson went on. Maybe it did the trick it did earlier, went into hyperspace again. Maybe it reappeared somewhere else in the tunnels. Maybe, Hawser said. He stopped by Wubslin, taking the man's elbow and turning him round from Dorolo's body. The engineer had been crying. Wubslin, Hawser said. Guard that bastard. He might try and get you to shoot him, but don't. That's what he wants. I'm going to take the son of a bitch back to the fleet so they can court-martial him. Dirtying his name is a punishment. Killing him would be doing him a favour, understand? Wubslin nodded. Still rubbing the bruised side of his head, Hawser went off down the platform with Yalson. They came to where the mind had been. Hawser turned the lights on his suit up and looked over the floor. He picked up a small, burned-looking thing near the mouth of the foot tunnel leading to Station 7. What's that? Yalson said, turning away from the body of the Adiran on the other access gantry. I think, Hawser said, turning the still-warm machine over in his hand. It's a remote drone. The mind left it behind? Yalson came over to look at it. It was just a blackened slab of material, some tubes and filaments showing through the lumpy, irregular surface where it had been hit by plasma fire. It's the mines, all right, Hawser said. He looked at Yalson. What exactly happened when they shot the mind? When he eventually hit it, it vanished. It had started to move, but it couldn't have accelerated that fast. I'd have felt the shockwave. It just vanished. It was like somebody turning off a projection, Hawser said. Yalson nodded. Yes, and there was a bit of smoke, not much. Do you mean to... He got it eventually. What do you mean? I mean, Yalson said, putting one hand on her hip and looking at Hawser with an impatient expression on her face, that it took 3 or 4 shots. The first went straight through it,
Are you saying it was a projection?
Horza nodded and held up the machine in his hand. It was this, a remote drone producing a hologram of the mind. Must have had a weak force field as well, so that it could be touched and pushed as though it was a solid object. But all there was inside was this. He smiled faintly at the wrecked machine. No wonder the damn thing didn't show up on our mass sensors.
So the mind's still around somewhere, Yalson said, looking at the drone in Horza's hand.
The changer nodded.
Balveda watched Horza and Yalson walk into the darkness at the far end of the station. She went over to where the drone floated above Nysin, monitoring his vital functions and sorting out some vials of medicine in the medkit. Wubslin kept his gun pointed at the trapped Adirin, but watched Balveda from the corner of his eye at the same time. The culture woman sat down cross-legged near the stretcher.
Before you ask, the drone said, no, there's nothing you can do.
I had guessed that, Unaharklosp, Balveda said.
Then you have ghoulish tendencies?
No. I wanted to talk to you.
Really?
The drone continued to sort the medicines.
Yes.
She sat forward, elbow on her knee, chin cupped in her hand. She lowered her voice a little.
Are you biding your time, or what?
The drone turned its front to her, an unnecessary gesture they both knew, but one it was used to making.
Biding my time?
You've let him use you so far. I just wondered how much longer. The drone turned away again, hovering over the dying man.
Perhaps you hadn't noticed, Ms. Balveda, but my choices in this matter are almost as limited as yours.
I've only got arms and legs, and I'm locked away at night. Trust up, you're not.
I have to keep watch. He has a movement sensor which he leaves switched on anyway, so he would know if I tried to escape, and besides, where would I go?
The ship? Balveda suggested, smiling. She looked back up the dark station, where the lights on their suits showed Yalson and the changer picking something up from the ground.
I would need his ring. Do you want to take it from him?
You must have an effector. Couldn't you fool the ship's circuits, or even just that motion sensor?
Ms. Balveda, call me Peristek. Peristek. I am a general-purpose drone, a civilian. I have light fields, the equivalent of many fingers, but not major limbs. I can produce a cutting field, but only a few centimetres in depth, and not capable of taking on armour. I can interface with other electronic systems, but I cannot interfere with the hardened circuits of military equipment. I possess an internal force field which lets me float, regardless of gravity, but apart from using my own mass as a weapon, that is not really of much use either. In fact, I am not particularly strong. When I needed to be for my job, there were attachments available for my use. Unfortunately, I was not employing them when I was abducted. Had I been, I probably wouldn't be here now.
Damn, Balveda said into the shadows. No aces up your sleeve?
No sleeves, Peristek.
Balveda took in a deep breath and stared glumly at the dark floor.
Oh dear, she said. Our leader approaches, Unaharklosp said, affecting weariness in its voice.
It turned and nodded its front toward Yalson and Horza, returning from the far end of the cavern. The changer was smiling. Balveda rose smoothly to her feet as Horza beckoned to her.
Peristek Balveda,
Horza said, standing with the others at the bottom of the rear access gantry and holding out one hand toward the Adirin trapped in the wreckage above.
Meet Zogzal.
This is the female you claim as a culture agent, human, the Adirin said,
turning his head awkwardly to look down at the group of people below him.
Pleased to meet you, Balveda muttered, arching one eyebrow as she gazed up at the trapped Adirin.
Horza walked up the ramp, passing Wubslin, who was training his gun on the trapped being. Horza still held the remote drone. He came to the second level ramp and looked down at the Adirin's face.
See this, Zogzal?
He held the drone up. It glinted in the lights of his suit. Zogzal nodded slowly.
It is a small piece of damaged equipment.
The deep, heavy voice betrayed signs of strain, and Horza could see a trickle of dark purple blood on the floor of the ramp Zogzal lay squashed upon. It's what you two proud warriors had when you thought you'd captured the mind. This is all there was. A remote drone casting a weak soligram. If you'd taken this back to the fleet, they'd have thrown you into the nearest black hole and wiped your name from the records. You're damn lucky I came along when I did. The Adirin looked thoughtfully at the wrecked drone for a short while.
You, Zogzal said slowly. are lower than vermin, human. Your pathetic tricks and lies would make a yearling laugh. There must be more fat inside your thick skull than there is even on your skinny bones. You aren't fit to be thrown up.
Hawser stepped onto the ramp, which had fallen on top of the Adiran. He heard the being's breath suck in harshly through taut lips as he walked slowly over to where Zogzal's face stuck out beneath the wreckage. And you, you goddamn fanatic, aren't fit to wear that uniform. I'm going to find the mind you thought you had, and then I'm going to take you back to the fleet, where if they've any sense, they'll let the Inquisitor try you for gross stupidity.
Fuck, the Adiran gasped painfully. Your animal soul.
Hawser used the neural stunner on Zogzal. Then he and Yalsin and the drone Unaha Klosp levered the ramp off the Adiran's body and sent it crashing down to the station floor. They cut the armour from the giant's body, then hobbled his legs with wire and tied down his arms to his sides. Zogzal had no broken limbs, but the keratin on one side of his body was cracked and oozed blood, while another wound, between his collar scale and right shoulder plate, had closed up once the pressure was taken off him. He was big, even for an Adiran, over 3.5 meters, and not thin. Hawser was glad the tall male, a section leader according to the insignia on the armour he had been wearing, was probably injured internally and going to be in pain. It would make him less of a problem to guard once he'd woken up. He was too big for the restrainer harness. Yalsin sat, eating a ration food bar, her gun balanced on one knee and pointing straight at the unconscious Adiran, while Hawser sat at the bottom of the ramp and tried to repair his helmet. Unaha Klosp watched over Nysin, as powerless as the rest of them to do anything to help the wounded man. Wubslin sat on the pallet making some adjustments to the mass sensor. He had already taken a look round the command system train, but what he really wanted was to see a working one, in better light and without radiation stopping him looking through the reactor car. Avager stood by Doralo's body for a while. Then he went to the far access ramp, where the body of the other Adiran, the one Zogzal had called Quernald, lay, holed and battered, limbs missing. Avager looked around and thought nobody was watching, but both Hawser, looking up from the wrecked helmet, and Balveda, walking round and stamping and shaking her feet in an attempt to keep warm, saw the old man swing his foot at the still body lying on the ramp, kicking the helmed head as hard as he could. The helmet fell off. Avager kicked the naked head. Balveda looked at Hawser, shook her head, then went on pacing up and down. "You're sure we've accounted for all the adherents?" Unaha Klosp asked Hawser. It had floated about the station and through the train accompanying Wubslin. Now it was facing the changer.
"That's the lot," Hawser said, looking not at the drone, but at the mess of fractured optic fibres lying bloated and fused together inside the outer skin of his helmet. "You saw the tracks."
"Hmm," the machine said.
"We've one drone," Hawser said, still not looking at it. "We'll get the power on in Station 7, and then it won't take us long to track the mine down."
"Your Mr. Adequate seems remarkably unconcerned about the liberties we're taking with his train set," the drone observed.
Hawser looked round at the wreckage and debris scattered near the train, then shrugged and went back to tinkering with the helmet.
"Maybe he's indifferent," he said.
"Or could it be he's enjoying all this?" Unaha Klosp said.
Hawser looked at it. The drone went on.
"This place is a monument to death, after all. A sacred place. Perhaps it is as much an altar as a monument, and we are merely carrying out a service of sacrifice for the gods."
Hawser shook his head.
"I think they left the fuse out of your imagination circuits, machine," he said, and looked back at the helmet.
Unaha Klosp made a hissing noise and went to watch Wubslin poking around inside the mass sensor.
"What have you got against machines, Hawser?" Balveda said, interrupting her pacing to come and stand nearby.
She rubbed her hands on her nose and ears now and again. Hawser sighed and put down the helmet.
"Nothing, Balveda, as long as they stay in their place."
Balveda made a snorting noise at that, then went on pacing. Yalsin spoke from further up the ramp.
"Did you say something funny?"
"I said machines ought to stay in their place. Not the sort of remark that goes down well with the culture."
"Yeah,"
Yalsin said, still watching the Adiran. Then she looked down at the scarred area on the front of her suit where it had been hit by a plasma bolt.
"Hawser," she said, "can we talk somewhere, not here?"
Hawser looked up at her.
"Of course," he said, puzzled.
Wubslin replaced Yalsin on the ramp. Yalsin walked to where Unahar Klosp floated over Nysin, its lights dim. It held an injector in one hazy field extension.
"How is he?" she asked the machine.
It turned its lights up.
"How does he look?" it said.
Yalsin and Horza said nothing. The drone let its lights fade again.
"He might last a few more hours."
Yalsin shook her head and headed for the tunnel entrance which led to the transit tube, followed by Horza. She stopped inside, just out of sight of the others, and turned to face the changer. She seemed to search for words but could not find them. She shook her head again and took off her helmet, leaning back against the curved tunnel wall. "What's the problem, Yalsin?" he asked her. He tried to take her hand, but she crossed her arms. "You having second thoughts about going on with this?" She shook her head.
"No, I'm going on. I want to see this goddamn superbrain. I don't care who gets it or if it gets blown up, but I want to find it."
"I didn't think you regarded it as that important."
"It's become important."
She looked away, then back again, smiling uncertainly.
"Hell, I'd come along anyway, just to try and keep you out of trouble."
"I thought maybe you'd gone off me a little lately," he said.
"Yeah," Yalsin said. "Well, I haven't been..."
She sighed heavily.
"What the hell?"
"What?" Horza said. He saw her shrug. The small, shaved head dropped again, silhouetted against the distant light. She shook her head.
"Oh, Horza," she said,
and gave a small, grunting laugh.
"You're not going to believe this."
"Believe what?"
"I don't know that I should tell. Tell me," he said. "I don't expect you to believe me, and if you do, I don't expect you to like it. Not all of it. I'm serious. Maybe I just shouldn't." She sounded genuinely troubled. He laughed lightly.
"Come on, Yalsin," he said. "You said too much to stop now. You just said you weren't one for turning back. What is it?"
"I'm pregnant."
He thought he'd misheard at first and was going to make a joke about what he'd thought he'd just heard, but some part of his brain played the sounds her voice had made back, double-checking, and he knew that that was exactly what she'd said. She was right. He didn't believe it. He couldn't.
"Don't ask me if I'm sure," Yalsin said.
She was looking down again, fiddling with her fingers and staring at them, or the floor beyond in the darkness, her ungloved hands protruding nakedly from the suit arms and pressing against each other.
"I'm sure."
She looked at him, though he couldn't see her eyes, and she wouldn't be able to see his.
"I was right, wasn't I?
You don't believe me, do you? I mean, it is by you.
That's why I'm telling you. I wouldn't say anything if I just happened to be..."
She shrugged.
"I thought maybe you'd guess when I asked about how much radiation we'd all absorbed. But now you're wondering how, aren't you?"
"Well," Horza said, clearing his throat and shaking his head, "it certainly shouldn't be possible. We're both... But we're from different species. It ought not to be possible."
"Well, there is an explanation."
Yalsin sighed, still looking at her fingers as they picked and kneaded at each other.
"But I don't think you'll like that either."
"Try me."
It's like this. My mother lived on a rock, a traveling rock, just one of the many, you know, one of the oldest. It had been just tramping around the galaxy for maybe 8,000 or 9,000 years, and..."
"Wait a minute," Horza said. "One of whose oldest?"
"My dad was some man from a place, a planet the rocks stopped off at one time. My mother said she'd be back sometime, but she never did go back. I told her I'd go back sometime just to see him, if he's still alive. Pure sentimentalism, I guess, but I said I would, and I will sometime, if I live through this lot."
She gave that same small half-laugh, half-grunt, and turned away from her picking fingers for a second to glance round the dark spaces of the station. Then her face again turned to the changer, and her voice was suddenly urgent, almost pleading.
"I'm only half-cultured by birth, Horza. I left the rock as soon as I was old enough to aim a gun properly. I knew the culture wasn't the place for me. That's how I inherited the gene-fixing for trans-species mating. I never thought about it before. It's supposed to be deliberate, or at least you've got to stop thinking yourself into not getting pregnant. But it didn't work this time. Maybe I let my guard slip somehow. It wasn't deliberate, Horza. It really wasn't. It never occurred to me. It just happened. I..."
"How long have you known?" Horza asked quietly.
"Since on the cat."
We were still a few days out from this place. I can't remember exactly. I didn't believe it at first. I know it's true, though. Look.
She leaned closer to him, and the note of pleading was in her voice again.
I can abort it. Just by thinking about it, I can get rid of it, if you want. Maybe I'd have done that already, but I know you've told me about not having any family, nobody to carry on your name, and I thought... Well, I don't care about my name. I just thought you...
She broke off and suddenly put her head back and ran her fingers through her short hair. It's a nice thought, Yalson, he said. Yalson nodded silently and went back to picking her fingers again.
Well, I'm giving you the choice, Horza, she said without looking at him. I can keep it, I can let it grow. I can keep it at the stage it's at now. It's up to you.
Maybe I just don't want to have to make the decision. I mean, maybe I'm not being all noble and self-sacrificing, but there it is. You decide.
Fuck knows what sort of weird crossbreed I might have inside me, but I thought you ought to know. Because I like you, and because... I don't know. Because it was about time I did something for somebody else for a change.
She shook her head again, and her voice was confused, apologetic, resigned all at once.
Or maybe because I want to do something to please myself, as usual. Oh.
He had started to put his arms out to her and edge closer. She suddenly came toward him, wrapping her arms tight round him. Their suits made the embrace cumbersome, and his back felt tight and strained. But he held her to him and rocked her gently backward and forward.
It would only be a quarter culture, Hoza, if you want. I'm sorry to leave it to you, but if you don't want to know, okay, I'll... think again and make my own decision. It's still part of me, so maybe I don't have any right to ask you. I don't really want to...
She sighed mightily.
Oh, God, I don't know, Horser. I really don't.
Yalson, he said, having thought about what he was going to say. I don't give a damn your mother was from the culture. I don't give a damn why what has happened has happened. If you want to go through with it, that's fine by me. I don't give a damn about any crossbreeding either. He pushed her away slightly and looked into the darkness that was her face. I'm flattered, Yalson, and I'm grateful too. It's a good idea. Like you would say, what the hell? He laughed then, and she laughed with him, and they hugged each other tightly. He felt tears in his eyes, though he wanted to laugh at the incongruity of it all. Yalson's face was on the hard surface of his suit's shoulder, near a laser burn. Her body shook gently inside her own suit. Behind them in the station, the dying man stirred slightly and moaned in the cold and darkness without an echo. He held her for a little while, then she pushed away to look into his eyes again.
Don't tell the others.
Of course not, if that's what you want. Please, she said. In the dimmed glow of their suit lights, the down on her face and the hair on her head seemed to shine like a hazy atmosphere around a planet seen from space. He hugged her again, unsure what to say. Surprise, partly, no doubt. But in addition, there was the fact that this revelation made whatever existed between them that much more important. And so he was more anxious than ever not to say the wrong thing, not to make a mistake. He could not let it mean too much. Not yet. She had paid him, perhaps, the greatest compliment he had ever had. But the very value of it frightened him, distracted him. He felt that whatever continuity of his name or clan the woman was offering him, he could not yet build his hopes upon it. The glimmer of that potential succession seemed too weak, and somehow also too temptingly defenseless to face the continuous frozen midnight of the tunnels.
Thanks, Yalson. Let's get this over with, down here, then we'll have a better idea what we want to do. But even if you change your mind later...
Thank you. It was all he could say. They returned to the station's dark cavern, just as the drone pulled a light sheet over Nysin's still form.
Oh, there you are, it said. I didn't see any point in contacting you.
Its voice was hushed. There wasn't anything you could have done.
Satisfied? Avager asked Horza, after they had put Nysin's body with Dorlo's.
They stood near the access gantry, where Yalson had resumed guard duty on the unconscious Idiran.
I'm sorry about Nysin and Dorlo, Horza told the old man. I liked them too. I can understand you being upset. You don't have to stay here now. If you want, go back to the surface. It's safe now. We've accounted for them all.
You've accounted for most of us too, haven't you? Avager said bitterly. You're no better than Creaklin.
Shut up, Avager,
Yalson said from the gantry. You're still alive. And you haven't done too badly either, have you, young lady? Avager said to her. You and your friend here. Yalson was quiet for a moment, then said,
You're braver than I thought, Avager. Just remember, it doesn't bother me a bit you're older and smaller than me. You want me to kick your balls in? She nodded and pursed her lips, still staring at the limp body of the Adiran officer lying in front of her. I'll do it for you, old boy.
Balveda came out to Avager and slipped her arm through his, starting to lead him away as she walked by.
Avager, she said, let me tell you about the time.
But Avager shrugged her away and went off by himself to sit with his back to the station wall opposite the reactor car. Hawser looked down the platform to where the old man sat.
He'd better watch his radiation meter, he said to Yalson. It's pretty hot down there near the reactor car.
Yalson gnawed at another ration bar.
Let the old bastard fry, she said.
Zugzal woke up. Yalson watched him regain consciousness, then waved the gun at him.
Tell the big creep to head on down the ramp, will you, Hawser? She said.
Zugzal looked down at Hawser and struggled awkwardly to his feet.
Don't bother, he said in Moraine. I can bark as well as you in this miserable excuse for a language.
He turned to Yalson.
After you, my man.
I am a female, Yalson growled, and waved the gun down the ramp. Now get your trefoil ass down there. Hawser's suit AG was finished. Unahar Klosp couldn't have taken Zuxal's weight anyway, so they would have to walk. Avager could float, so could Wubslin and Yalson, but Balveda and Hawser would have to take turns riding on the pallet, and Zuxal would need to footslog the whole 27 kilometers to Station 7. They left the two human bodies near the doors to the transit tubes, where they could collect them later. Hawser threw the useless lump of the mine's remote drone to the station floor, then blasted it with his laser.
Did that make you feel better? Avager said.
Hawser looked at the old man floating in his suit, ready to head up the tunnel with the rest of them.
Tell you what, Avager, if you want to do something useful, why don't you float up to that access ramp and put a few shots through the head of Zoxal's comrade up there, just to make sure he's properly dead? Yes, Captain, Avager said, and gave a mock salute.
He moved through the air to the ramp where the Adiran's body lay.
Okay, Hawser said to the rest. Let's go.
They entered the foot tunnel as Avager landed on the middle level of the access ramp. Avager looked down at the Adiran. The armored suit was covered with burn marks and holes. The creature had one arm and one leg missing. There was blood, dried black, all over the place. The Adiran's head was charred on one side, and where he had kicked it earlier, Avager could see the cracked keratin just below the left eye socket. The eye, dead, jammed open, stared at him. It looked loose in its bone hemisphere, and some sort of pus had oozed out of it. Avager pointed his gun at the head, setting the weapon to single shot. The first pulse blew the injured eye off. The second punched a hole in the creature's face under what might have been its nose. A jet of green liquid splashed out of the hole and landed on Avager's suit chest. He splashed some water from his flask over the mess and let it dribble off.
Filth, he muttered to himself, shouldering his gun. All of it. Filth.
Look. They were less than 50 meters into the tunnel. Avager had just entered it and started floating toward them when Wubslin shouted. They stopped, looking into the screen of the mass sensor. Almost at the center of the close-packed green lines, there was a grey smudge. The reactor trace they were used to seeing, the sensor being fooled by the nuclear pile in the train behind them. Right at the very edge of the screen, straight ahead, and over 26 kilometers away, there was another echo. It was no grey patch, no false trace. It was a harsh, bright pinpoint of light, like a star on the screen.
Chapter 12. The Command System. Engines.
A sky like chipped ice, a wind to cut you to the bloody core, too cold for snow for most of the journey. But once for 11 days and nights it came, a blizzard over the field of ice we walked on, howling like an animal with a bite like steel. The crystals of ice flowed like a single torrent over the hard and frozen land. You could not look into it or breathe, even trying to stand was near impossible. We made a hole, shallow and cold, and lay in it until the skies cleared. We were the walking wounded, straggled band. Some we lost when their blood froze in them. One just disappeared, at night in a storm of snow. Some died from their wounds. One by one, we lost them, our comrades and our servants. Everyone begged us make use what we could of their corpse once they were gone. We had so little food. We all knew what it meant. We were all prepared. Name a sacrifice more total or more noble. In that air, when you cried, the tears froze on your face with a cracking sound like a heart breaking. Mountains. The high passes we climbed through, famished in that thin and bitter air. The snow was white powder, dry as dust. To breathe it was to freeze from inside. Flurries from the jagged slopes dislodged by feet in front, stung in the throat like acid spray. I saw rainbows in the crystal veils of ice and snow, which were the product of our passing, and grew to hate those colours. That freezing dryness, the starved high air and dark blue skies. 3 glaciers we traversed, losing 2 of our comrades in crevasses, beyond sight or sound, falling further than an echo's reach. Deep in a mountain ring we came to a marsh. It lay in that scoop like a cess for hope. We were too slow, too stupefied to save our quirl when he walked out into it and floundered there. We thought it could not be, with air so cold around us, even in that one sunlight. We thought it must be frozen, and we saw what only seemed to be, and our eyes would clear, and he would come walking back to us, not slip beneath that dark ooze out of reach. It was an oil marsh, we realized too late, after the tarry depths had claimed their toll from us. The next day, while we were still looking for a way across, the chill came harder still, and even that sludge locked itself to stillness, and we walked quickly to the other side. In the midst of frozen water, we began to die of thirst. We had little to heat the snow with save our own bodies, and eating that white dust until it numbed us made us groggy with the cold of it, slowing our speech and step. But we kept on. Though the cold sucked at us, whether awake or trying to sleep, and the harsh sun blinded us in fields of glittering white and filled our eyes with pain. The wind cut us. Snow tried to swallow us. Mountains like cut black glass blocked us, and the stars on clear nights taunted us, but on we came. Near 2,000 kilometers, little one, with only the small amount of food we could carry from the wreck. What little equipment had not been turned to junk by the barrier beast and our own determination. We were 44 when we left the battlecruiser, 27 when we began our trek across the snows, 8 of my kind, 19 of the Medjel folk. 2 of us completed the journey, and 6 of our servants. Do you wonder that we fell upon the first place we found with light and heat? Does it surprise you that we just took and did not ask? We had seen brave warriors and faithful servants die of cold, watched each other wear away as though the ice blasts had abraded us. We had looked into the cloudless, pitiless skies of a dead and alien place and wondered who might be eating who when the dawnlight came. We made a joke of it at first, but later, when we had marched a 30-day and most of us were dead, in ice gullies, mountain ravines, or raw in our own bellies, we did not think it so funny. Some of the last, perhaps, not believing our course was true, I think died of despair. We killed your human friends, these other changes. I killed one with my own hands. Another, the first, fell to a Medjel while he still slept. The one in the control room fought bravely, and when he knew he was lost, destroyed many of the controls. I salute him. There was another who put up a fight in the place where they stored things. He, too, died well. You should not grieve too much for them. I shall face my superiors with the truth in my eyes and heart. They will not discipline me. They will reward me, should I ever stand before them.
Hauser was behind the Adiran, walking down the tunnel after him, while Yalsin took a rest from guarding the tall triped. Hauser had asked Zugzal to tell him what had happened to the raiding party, which had come to the planet inside the Chuihertzi animal. The Adiran had responded with an oration.
She, Hauser said.
What, human?
Zugzal's voice rumbled down the tunnel. He hadn't bothered to turn round when he talked. He spoke to the clear air of the foot tunnel leading to Station 7, his powerful, bassy voice easily heard even by Wubslin and Avager, who were bringing up the rear of the small, motley band.
You did it again, Horsa said, wearily, talking to the back of the Adiran's head.
The one killed while asleep, it was a she, a woman, a female.
Well, the Medjel attended to her. We laid them out in the corridor. Some of their food proved edible. It tasted like heaven to us.
How long ago was that? Horza asked.
About 8 days, I think. It is hard to keep time down here. We tried to construct a mass sensor immediately, knowing that it would be invaluable, but we were unsuccessful. All we had was what was undamaged from the changer base. Most of our own equipment had been attacked by the beast of the barrier, or had to be abandoned when we set off from the warp animal to come here, or left en route, as we died off.
You must have thought it was a bit of luck finding the mine so easily. Horza kept his rifle trained on the tall Idirin's neck, watching Zuxal all the time. The creature might be injured. Horza knew enough about the species to tell that the section leader was in pain just from the way he walked. But he was still dangerous. Horza didn't mind him talking, though. It passed the time.
We knew it was injured. We found it in Station 6, and it did not move or show any sign of noticing us. We assumed that those were only the signs of its damage. We already knew that you had arrived. It was only a day ago. We accepted our good luck without second thoughts and prepared to make our escape. You only just stopped us. Another few hours and we would have had that train working.
More likely you'd have blown yourself into radioactive dust, Horza told the Idirin.
Think what you like, little one. I knew what I was doing.
I'm sure, Horza said skeptically. Why did you take all the guns with you and leave the Medgel on the surface without a weapon?
We had intended to take one of the changers alive and interrogate him, but failed. Our own fault, no doubt. Had we done so, we could have reassured ourselves there was nobody else down here ahead of us. We were so late in getting here, after all.
We took all the available weaponry down with us and left the servant on the surface with only a communicator, so we didn't find the communicator, Horza interrupted.
Good. He was supposed to hide it when not checking in, Zuxal said, then went on. So we had what little firepower we did possess where it might be needed most. Once we realized that we were in here by ourselves, we said,